Welcome to Networking 2002. Welcome in particular to this session on cross-cultural communication online, some perspectives from around the globe. My name is Michael Coghlan, and I'm from the Douglas Mawson Institute of Technology in Adelaide, South Australia. I'm also a member of a virtual community, a virtual learning community called the Webheads. The Webheads arose out of the teaching and learning of English. So it was founded by Vance Stevens, who's based in the United Arab Emirates, and I guess the Webheads community has been around some 5 years now. When I was first asked to do this presentation on cross-cultural communication some time back, I found the thought a little bit daunting initially. I don't consider myself an expert in this field, though as an English as a second language teacher for 13 years, I've had daily experience with cross-cultural communication, talking with other people from other cultures. It seemed an obvious thing then that I asked my colleagues in the Webheads to co-present with me, because they, like me, have a lot to do with the teaching and learning of English, and on a daily basis are communicating online with people from other cultures. I'd like to say a couple of things about some issues that I think are important in relation to this topic, and then I'll briefly describe the kinds of perspectives that other members of the community will be highlighting in their short presentations. People who are ESL or EFL teachers will find it difficult if you ask them what are the skills of a good cross-cultural communicator. They may not be able to come up with anything more shattering or enlightening than, well, you just need the skills of a good communicator in any context. The receptive skills of being a good listener and being sensitive, being patient. There is a school of thought that thinks that there's an instant recipe for being a good cross-cultural communicator, that if, for example, you're going to work with a group of Koreans, you need to get hold of the guidebook, you need to get hold of the expert who can tell you these are the 10 points you need to know if you're going to be working with Korean people. These are the things that can guarantee that you'll be a hit. The instant recipe approach. Well, I don't think it works, and I'd be very suspicious of that approach. I'd much rather approach a situation like that as one of discovery, one of exploration. I would go into a situation working with a group of Korean people, for example, knowing we had different worldviews, knowing there were going to be significant differences in the way we think, and enjoy uncovering those and sharing why and analysing our different ways of thinking. A problem with that approach is that it tends to be stereotypical. We can say in general that people from Asian cultures are going to define their sense of identity in terms of a group. We can say in general that Westerners, like me, are going to define their identity more in terms of the individual. But within that conglomerate of Asian cultures, there are significant differences from one culture to the next. And certainly within any one culture, there are significant differences from one individual to the next. So you wouldn't want to approach a group of Koreans and treat them all the same, because you'd be asking for trouble, because this instant recipe approach does tend to stereotype people. There's another approach to cross-cultural communication which I think we should be on guard against. And let's this time use the example of Egypt. Let's say I'm about to go off to Egypt or work with a group of Egyptian people. Again, someone might be tempted to go and find an expert or a book which will tell them all the things they need to know about communicating with Egyptian people. And then there's a cringe factor somehow assumed in there, a bit of a deficit model. It goes like this: I'm Australian, they're Egyptian. If I'm going to communicate effectively with these people, I, as an Australian, need to learn things so that I can communicate with Egyptians. Well, I think, again, you need to treat these situations more as an opportunity for you to be an advocate of your own culture, be unashamedly who you are. In my case, be unashamedly Australian. Use it as an opportunity to teach other people about how Australians think and how Australians behave. And, of course, on the other hand, use the opportunity to learn how Egyptians think and behave. So again, it's a mutual exploration. It's not learning this list of dot points that will guarantee effective communication with other cultures. These how-to guides of how to communicate with Fijians or with people in Spain may be useful. They certainly make intriguing reading, but they're not going to guarantee successful cross-cultural communications. Now, the presentations that follow are from a number of people, so I'll just quickly go through each one of them. Chris Jones and Aidan Yeh start by looking at email exchanges they've been sponsoring with their students. Aidan's is particularly interesting because her students have been using the now famous International Writing Exchange established by Ruth Vilmi in Finland. Rita Zonsteyer from Argentina will look at teachers as cross-cultural communicators, and in particular touching on those issues that I mentioned of stereotyping people and knowing the rules about learning a culture. I mean, how important is that? Shinichiro Ito from Japan will look at the students she works with who are Japanese students in Japan learning English and focuses on how learning styles, a direct result of a cultural upbringing, may affect the way one approaches learning a language and your ability to communicate effectively across cultures. Ismail Fayed from Egypt talks about the age of globalization and how in this world of post-September the 11th, it's even more important for you to be able to represent your national identity effectively on the internet. Elizabeth Hanson-Smith from the United States also looks at the impact of student-centered learning approaches on students from other cultures. With the advent of the internet, more collaborative student-centered approaches are certainly possible, and it could be that students who are from cultures that are more teacher-led may have difficulty adopting or making that transition to other methodologies that are more student-centered. Vance Stevens, the founder of the WebHeads community, looks at this question of cross-cultural communication from an interesting perspective, and Vance argues that online, the lack of physical presence actually brings out the individual more than the culture, and it's true online that it's actually more difficult to highlight the culture or determine whether or not someone is from a different cultural background from you. And that when people start communicating online, we actually start communicating with a person rather than a culture. Daphne Gonzalez from Venezuela focuses on her experience in the WebHeads community, where people, again, from many different languages, many different cultures, had a common goal, and that common goal was more important than the fact that we're all from different cultures. If there is a common goal, that will override cultural differences. I hope that's given you some useful insight into the nature of this presentation and the perspectives we're going to be presenting. Please join us in the chat sessions that will be scheduled to be part of this presentation, and likewise the forums. We hope that most of the people co-presenting here will be able to be present in the chat rooms. They'll certainly all drop into the forums. So when you come to the forums, please bring your questions with you, and likewise when you visit the chat room. I hope this presentation is useful. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of the conference.